All of us are interested in money, but some of us get so interested in it that we want to manufacture it ourselves. Bernard von Nothaus started life as an architect in the Midwest, traveled and taught in different countries around the world, and eventually became the mint master at the Royal Hawaiian Mint in Honolulu, where he specialized in Hawaiian numismatics and created financial instruments for local, national, and international clients. He's been studying economics and monetary history since 1974. In 1997, he wrote Free Market Currency and proposed the world's first working model for an organic monetary standard. In 1998, the American Liberty Currency, or Liberty Dollar, was issued to exemplify these principles of a market-sensitive, value-backed private currency that is totally free from government control. Currently, he's the senior economist at NORFED, the National Organization for the Repeal of the Federal Reserve Act and the Internal Revenue Service. NORFED is a nonprofit free enterprise corporation that distributes the Liberty Dollar to an international network of over 1,000 redemption centers. He speaks internationally on the current fiat government monetary system that we all use that is manipulated in every country by the central bank. And he's postulated something called Bernard's Law. It goes like this. When the people own the money, they control the government. When the government owns the money, it controls the people. In our conversation today, Bernard and I are joined once again by our Canadian economist, Tim Madden. One of the mysteries is that a child is born in a world where things are fairly direct and have to do with eating and sleeping. And at a certain point, a child encounters this stuff called money. And if they ask questions about money, usually their parents don't know the answers. I'm going to take advantage of your being here today, Bernard, to ask you those questions which my parents couldn't answer. So my first question is, where did money come from? What is it anyway?
Money actually grew out of thousands, maybe millions of transactions between different people who decided upon using one particular item as the thing that they could put their store of value into and then trade out of that for the item that they wanted.
So at different times in history, people were exchanging things that they had that were extra, that they didn't need for their survival, trading that for things that they needed more of.
That's right. That would be called direct barter. When you're trading one item for another item, that's direct barter. But when you trade into a third commodity, that's what becomes money. It's that third party item is what's known as money.
So what are the characteristics that have evolved over the centuries, over the millennia, of this third item, the one that stands in the middle between the two things which are being exchanged?
The most important thing is value. Money has to contain a certain value, otherwise it can be manipulated or it may be subverted in some particular way.
So how is that value established? I want to trade something to you, and you don't really need what I have. So I have to go find a third thing, which is neutral, which is our medium of exchange.
That's right.
And I trade it to you, and then you give me the things that I want. Let's say I want two pairs of shoes, and I give you four pretty stones. How is the value of that two pairs of shoes connected to the four pretty stones so that when you go someplace else, you can exchange the stones for something of equal value to the two pairs of shoes?
Actually, that's created in the marketplace. That's one of the marvels of the marketplace, because what people do is they act in their own self-interest. And when they do that, they establish the value for that particular item. When people decide upon one particular item, then that item becomes money. And then at that point, other things are valued against that particular commodity or that item.
So as culture evolves, a group develops its own standard or its own measure of value through use and practice. That's what you're saying.
Actually, through thousands and thousands of transactions.
Now, where does the government get involved with this? When does that start?
The government gets involved because it plays a central role to standardize and to guarantee that that money contains a value as specified by law or by dictate or by agreement by those people that's using that money.
So in the United States, which is a relatively new country, what was the opportunity and how was that opportunity set up at the very beginning of our history, and then what were the stages that brought us to today?
In the beginning, if you're talking about colonial America, predominantly it was the British monetary system. Everybody was short of money. And so the different social groups in colonial America banded together and decided to issue their own money.
What did that money look like?
Actually, it looked like a variety of different things. Often it was just script that they would write out on paper, and they would give it a certain value based upon the British currency, and they would trade that between themselves. There's a great story about Benjamin Franklin explaining about why America is so prosperous. And the bottom line there is because they made their own money. They weren't dependent upon the British system or the British money to be in circulation because they literally made their own.
And so then we go up to the Revolutionary War and the establishment of this new government. In your mind, what were the important steps that set up the money in the beginning? And then let's follow through and see how it changed since then up until today.
Even though the Continental Congress declared war against England, which was at that time the most mighty military force on the planet, they didn't create any way to finance the war. They had no other means other than to issue script saying that basically if we won the war, this was going to be worth so much money. And that was all written against the Spanish mil dollar. So they wrote out what was called continental currency. And because there was nothing backing it, it inflated, and it inflated throughout the whole war. So at the end of the war, America had 5,000% inflation. It's amazing. They didn't have anything backing the currency. And that's the main reason why the founding fathers demanded that there would be only gold and silver and no paper.
At the end of the war, what was the first step that the founding fathers took, and what did they actually institute as law, and how did that proceed?
Well, at the end of the war, everybody didn't go back to work and was real happy campers. At the end of the war, with 5,000% inflation, there was kidnappings, there was rioting, there was unemployment, there was ride-by shootings. The delegates themselves talked about having to fight their way through the rioting outside of the Independence Hall so they could get inside to debate. And what did they debate? The hottest thing they debated was emitting bills of credit. The monetary powers wanted to continue to emit bills of credit, in other words, fiat currency. The founding fathers decided that they didn't want to do that, and they removed that from the Constitution.
So just for clarity, fiat currency, the fiat is a Latin word which means to make something. It's just by decree, they say this is the value of this piece of paper.
That's right, with no discipline.
So they took the emergency measure. Then let's just proceed and see how it settled down. And did it ever reach a point where it was working properly in your mind, that it was working well?
Within 2 years of ratification of the Constitution, there's a great letter between George Washington and General Lafayette. And to paraphrase, George Washington says, "Dear sir, you must be aware of the phenomenal growth of our country. Who would have believed that within 2 years of repealing the right to emit bills of credit and going back to gold and silver, that everybody would be at work. Everybody is happy. There is no lawlessness. There is no unemployment within 2 years. All the problems in America today are directly related to the fiat money issued by the Federal Reserve."
So through the 19th century, you mentioned the central bank and the debates about that. Can you give us a synopsis of what happened with the central bank or the attempts to put it in place? Why were the people in favor of it trying to do it, and why were the people against it trying to stop it?
The people that supported the idea of central banks were the monetary powers that wanted to control the people based upon their successful models that they had already executed in all the countries in Europe. You might say they really needed to do that in the United States, because if the people came over from Europe and they found out there wasn't a central bank and everybody was free and had lots of money, well, the jig was going to be up. So they employed a variety of different people, and including Alexander Hamilton, to create different central banks so that they could get control of the money. Now, that was in direct competition with the goals of the common man. So the very first central bank happened even before the U.S. Constitution was written. The second one happened shortly after the Constitution was ratified. Then a third one happened in 1816. But President Andrew Jackson rose to do battle with that and closed that, not quite 20 years after that. And then, of course, the fourth one was started by the New York bankers when they met on Jekyll Island in 1910. And, of course, it was legalized by Congress 2 days before Christmas in 1913, the Federal Reserve.